Welcome to How Leaders Lead. I'm Kula Callahan, here to bring you another edition of Three More Questions with David Novak. It's great to be back with you, David.
It sure is fun to be with you, Kula, and I'm looking forward to this debriefing of my conversation I had with Neil Blumenthal and Dave Gilboa. They're co-CEOs of Warby Parker, and I think the glasses I'm wearing right now came from Warby Parker.
Well, they look great on you, David.
Well, thank you, Kula.
I love listening to this conversation. Like you said, they're co-CEOs, and that's a structure you really don't find that often in companies as big as Warby Parker. If you haven't listened to their episode and how they make that partnership work as co-CEOs, I highly recommend going back and listening to the episode. It'll certainly inspire you to lead your team.
You know, Kula, one of the things that I really understood after talking to these two guys is why they've made the co-CEO work. You know, because they don't put their ego into the business. They're very humble. They understand each other's strengths. They really communicate to each other all the time, and they trust each other. And, you know, all they want to do is make Warby Parker better. And, you know, I think that that organization and their culture has got to feel their bond. And I think that that is cascaded up and down their organization. And I only see very powerful things for them in the future because of their mindset and their focus on growth.
Absolutely, David. And that's a great tee up for our first question of today's episode. So let's get going with it.
All right, fire away.
Question number one. Neil and Dave believe that part of their competitive advantage is that their data and information flows quickly across their entire company. They believe that if you want to scale a growth company, information just has to travel fast. David, how can leaders eliminate silos and bureaucracy so that the right information gets to each department in a way that's really fast?
You know, Kula, as you ask that question, it reminds me of a podcast we did with Jeff Colvin. And he's the senior editor-at-large for Fortune magazine, and he wrote a book called Humans Are Underrated. And one of the things that he's trying to make the point on is that, hey, look, you know, in this age of AI and this age of computerization, humans can do things that a computer will never do. One of the things he talks about is humans have empathy. The other thing he talks about is just the ability to collaborate. And the great companies today really make collaboration a behavior that they want to drive throughout their organization. And that's what Neil and Dave are doing. You know, that's why they're focused on eliminating the silos and the bureaucracy. And they want their people working together, collaborating, sharing information, and getting the best ideas. So they make that really a strong value in their company, and they shout it from the rooftops. And I think that's the first thing you have to do as leaders. You have to say, this is what it takes to be successful in this company if you want to be a leader. You've got to share information. You've got to be a know-how builder. And once you learn something, you got to do everything you can not to hoard it so that you know something that someone else doesn't know. But you want to make sure that everyone in the organization knows it so they can take advantage of that learning. So, you know, I think as a leader, you've got to drive that as a part of your culture. And when you see it, then recognize the heck out of it. When you see somebody, you know, really sharing information, getting outside of their silo, breaking down bureaucracy, recognize people for doing that. And then that behavior will happen more and more often. The other thing you can do is you can actually put your bonus structure around it. When I was at Yum Brands, we basically paid an extra bonus kicker to the division and to the leaders who did the best job of sharing information and sharing the know-how that they would develop. And I think that is a way to get people's attention. I don't think it's required, but it also shows people what's really valued. And then once we decided which division or which person really got that extra bonus because of their ability to share and collaborate, we told everybody about it. And, you know, guess what? You know, they said, hey, I'd like to be that person next year. And so it builds and feeds off itself. And those are just a few suggestions.
Well, David, like Neil and Dave said, if you really believe that this is what sets your company apart, then you really have to recognize people for what they do, because that, like you said, reiterates the behavior in others and keeps you at the front of that competitor set.
One other thing, Kula, is I think about it, you know, you got to let people know why it's important in your business. You know, like at Yum Brands, for example, we were in well over 100 countries. We're learning everywhere. You know, we were getting knowledge about our customers everywhere. We were innovating everywhere. And that's a big competitive advantage because we're not just in one place. We're all over. And we've got these great teams with great minds and great thoughts. Man, if we can get everybody sharing that information, just think, we get a huge competitive advantage. We can get to market faster, and that's speed is very important. And we can get to market with the things that really will make the biggest difference for our customers, which is always the most important thing that you can do. So, you know, you got to believe deep down that getting rid of bureaucracy and getting rid of all the silos is really going to work for you. And I know we certainly believe that.
I never thought I would be this fired up about getting rid of bureaucracies and silos, but that answer really got me amped to do that even in our own organization.
Well, bureaucracy is pretty boring, but you got to hate that. You got to hate bureaucracy. I mean, when I would see us doing stuff that we shouldn't be doing and that was just adding more complexity to something, I would literally go bonkers and say, hey, we just don't want to do that. I remember, for example, when I first went to KFC, we had more measures than Cox's has pills. We were measuring everything. And people were walking around with these books, measuring everything. We broke it down to the vital few because all we were doing was creating bureaucracy for people to have to manage. And, you know, you just got to declare war on bureaucracy and wipe out not invented here. Those are key things that I think every great company always tries to do.
Question number two. At the very beginning of Warby Parker, Neil and Dave knew that they wanted their price to be accessible for their customers. They'd originally wanted to price their glasses at $45 a frame. But after a professor at Wharton told them that no one would believe their product was any good if it were priced that low, they increased the price of those frames to $95. And you can actually still get a pair of Warby Parker glasses for just $95. David, what advice can you give leaders about how to price their products competitively?
Well, first of all, you got to know that it's critically important that your value proposition is right. You know, you can't ignore your pricing. You got to know how your pricing stacks up against your customers. And if you're premium price, are you really adding value that justifies that premium? You know, I'll never forget a conversation I had with Bob Ulrich, who used to be on the Yum Board of Directors, and he was a CEO of Target. And one time he was talking to Roger Enrico, who used to run PepsiCo, and he said, you know, Target is fundamentally competitive with Walmart. Roger Enrico says, what do you mean fundamentally competitive? He says, well, we're in the ball game. Well, what do you mean you're in the ball game? I mean, if I buy a box of Tide at Target, in a box of Tide at Walmart, do I have to pay a premium at Target? Well, you probably do. Well, is that box of Tide that much better at Target than Walmart? Probably not. And so what Bob Ulrich then realized is they had to get their cost structure more in order so they could go toe-to-toe with Walmart on the pricing front because their value proposition wasn't such that was providing that much more added value where you should really charge a premium price at Target. And, you know, that was something that he really had to get his organization to really understand, that you got to be competitive against Walmart. Now, one thing I really want to emphasize, you can't put your head in the sand on your value proposition. If your pricing is out of whack versus your competition versus the value you provide, there's no way that you're ever going to be able to be successful. And by the way, one of the keys to Taco Bell's great success is that the pricing that they have on their products just blows away the category in terms of value. And when you can do that, then you're going to have dramatic growth. And, you know, one thing that people are always amazed about when they go to Taco Bell is how little they pay for how much they get. And that is a wonderful formula for success.
Question number three. In the episode, Neil and Dave talk about the growth plans they have for Warby Parker. They talk about how they've launched a contact lens business and are investing in telemedicine along with several other efforts within Warby Parker. You mentioned in the episode that it's kind of like they're serial entrepreneurs within their own business, always looking for ways to innovate and expand. Where should leaders look when they're trying to innovate while also staying true to their core brand and product?
Well, I think what Warby Parker's done and what Neil and Dave have done is they've really looked for adjacent categories, you know, categories that are very close in to what they do, but bring in a different business, a different segment, and allow them to really grow the business. I think when you really get off track is when you get outside of your lane, so much so that you don't have any real expertise to bring a lot of value to it. So I think the biggest thing you can do is ask yourself, hey, how do we grow what we already have? What expertise do we have that will allow us to go into other categories with credibility? And then what makes us think that we can win over the long term in that specific category? And if I think you ask yourself those questions, you know, you got a good start to begin to figure it out.
You know, what they've really thought about as they've made these plans for expansion and innovation is making the customer experience one that is seamless. So if a customer goes to Warby Parker, gets an eye exam to figure out what their prescription is and then buys eyeglasses, but then also wants contact lenses, they don't want their customer to have to go elsewhere to get those contact lenses. So I think also positioning your growth opportunities around what makes a better customer experience is a good way to think about it as well.
And all those examples that you talk about is right in their lane. It's what they should be experts at. And the more they understand their customers and the problems of their customers, the more that takes them into new areas of innovation and new business segments. Great case study.
Well, that does it for our episode of Three More Questions for Today. Thank you so much for tuning in to How Leaders Lead. We're on a mission to make the world a better place by developing better leaders. And if you carve out a little time with us each and every week, we'll help you build the confidence you need to lead well.
And coming up next on How Leaders Lead is John Rahm, professional golfer and the defending Masters champion.